Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of May 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. We'll take a quick look into the Indianapolis 500 tradition of drinking milk in the winner's circle, and we'll also discuss what's happening with the weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. We'll update you on the cash grain market with the guys at the Andersons facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, all during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. July contract up 7.25 in the corn pit at $4.04 3/4. September at 4.07 1/4, up 7.25, and December at 4.08 1/2, up 5 3/4. March futures 4.15 1/4, 5 3/4 higher. Next year's May up 5.5 cents at 4.17 3/4. July soybeans up 30 3/4 cents today. It settled at $10.85 1/2. The August at $10.81 3/4, 28 3/4 higher. September beans 10.65 1/2, up 26. November up 25 at 10.54 1/4. January soybeans at $10.48 3/4, up 22 1/4. Soft red winter wheat for the day. July at 4.66, up 2 cents. The hard red at 4.51, 4 1/2 higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby June at $118.15. That was up 15 cents for the day. The August live cattle at $113.45 were up 27 1/2 cents. May feeder cattle at $145.37 1/2, 62 1/2 cents lower. August up 60 at $142.70. And lean hogs for the day at $80.15, up 47 1/2 cents. Back on the oilseeds and the grains, bean oil up 45 cents at $31.34. And bean meal, it was really the leader there today. Was up $18.30 in the July contract. That's per ton at $407.20. We'll talk more about that as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Remember, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming not long after it airs on our radio stations for you to listen to on demand.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
Checking some of the outside markets at this hour. July crude oil at $49.66, up $1.04. Ethanol futures at $1.65 1/10, 2 8/10 cents higher. Gasoline, this is the wholesale price, the RBOB, at $1.64 2/10, is 1 2/10 cents lower. Heating oil for the day now at $1.51 3/10. That's diesel fuel up 2 4/10 cents. Natural gas at $1.97 4/10 is just about 6 1/10 cents lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 142 points at 17,829. The U.S. dollar is down 0.231 at 95.345. And gold at $1,224.90 a troy ounce is down $4.30. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for this evening in the Urbana-Champaign area. A 50% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, a low of 67 degrees. South winds at 9 to 11, gusting to 15. Tomorrow, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a high tomorrow of 87 degrees. South-southwest winds at 10 to 14, gusting to 18. And Thursday evening, a 50% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy. We'll drop back to just 68 degrees for our low. And then Friday, a 50% chance of thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a high of 83. Southwest winds at 7 to 16, gusting to 24. Friday night, a 40% chance of rainfall. We'll drop to a low on Friday night of 66. And on Saturday, a 50% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a high near 81 degrees. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy skies. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing now joins us to take up the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Chip. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me just a little bit about what happened in Chicago. Was this driven by bean meal, by weather, by a series of factors?
I think mostly by meal. Some of the other factors are the funds are already long a large amount of soybeans. They've been slowly building a long corn position. And now here it does look like soy meal kind of in the middle of a short squeeze. Some commercials short bought meal due to the slow harvest progress out of Argentina. So they're not getting beans or meal out into the market as fast as they normally would, and it's got crushers scrambling for supplies. And so it just kind of all fed on itself here. We had a big, big day in the beans. Pretty good day in corn, knocking on the door of those old highs from a few weeks ago, and wheat more of a follower today, but still closing positive for the day.
Is this the kind of thing that can last, given that it's bean meal and short supplies out of South America? Is it a longer-term function based on their availability of their crop or just not being able to move it through the distribution systems there?
I think a little bit of both. Obviously, the wet weather has cut their total crop size. They did have some actual yield losses there due to the wet weather. So, you know, that is one issue. Their crop isn't going to be as big as what the market maybe expected a couple months ago. And so, you know, number one is going to be less supplies. But number two then is what we would think be more of a temporary type issue that has just been a little bit of a delay getting those supplies on the market. So some of this and a lot of it seems to be kind of, to the July meal contracts specifically. So, you know, I would think that by the time that goes off the board, which is going to be, 5-6 weeks down the road here, that logistics issue will have worked itself out. And then all eyes are going to be on the extended weather forecast and, you know, what our crop prospects are going to be like going forward. So there's a lot of bullishness built in the bean market already. They were the first market to rally. I would say corn may be something that could be sustained or maybe have a little more upside just because it appears like the funds are in buy mode now. But some of the issues that we're talking about here in the last week or two in the bean market should be more of a temporary logistics issue.
Okay, so let's talk about these separately and what you mean by the difference between the buy mode for corn and just the logistic issues for soybeans. Does this tell you that for new crop soybeans, producers need to be looking for places to price at least a portion of what they'll be putting in the ground?
Yeah, I definitely think so. We've had a huge rally over $2 from the low, I guess working on $2.25-$2.30 off the lows from a couple months ago in beans. So has to be looked at as a definite opportunity. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that if we get into a hot, dry July and August timeframe that we can't go higher, but there's a lot of bullishness. So what I meant earlier was the funds, the bean market rallied first while corn and wheat were still kind of languishing on the lows, near contract lows. The bean market had a big explosion higher. Some of that is kind of precautionary buying or buying in anticipation or as a bet on some summer weather problems. So there's a fair amount of bullishness built into the bean market where we're at currently. Corn isn't quite the same situation because the funds just within the last couple of weeks kind of flipped over. They had a large short position built up really all winter. And here just within the last 2 or 3 weeks, they finally exited that short position. Now they're building a pretty moderate-sized long position. And so, from a relative standpoint, corn may have further to go to the upside in the short run than beans do because beans made the move first.
And so how much upside potential do you think they have?
I think corn, assuming that the funds are going to kind of stay, with a buy the dip and add to long mentality right now, which based on where we're at on the calendar makes sense to me, I would think that you could see another 20, 30 cents pretty easily in the corn market, over the next 2-3 weeks. And then it really all for both corn and beans is going to boil down to July and August weather. Are we going to see any hot, dry weather patterns set up? Are we going to stress pollination? Are we going to stress some of those late planted crops in the southern corn belt? Then it's all bets are off, and it's really more about Mother Nature and what our crop size is going to be, which to me says there could be some really major volatility in corn and beans both in July and August based on potential weather scares or issues that would pop up.
And producers should be prepared to do what, if anything, at that point?
Well, I think a lot of people, $4 cash corn for the fall, it's kind of a magic number for new crop. We're not quite there yet. The deferred markets for stored bushels, we could do better than that in the deferred contracts. Yeah, I think certainly if we get at or above $4, the producer has to kind of be ready, willing, and able to start the process, whether that's some mild sales, some put protection. The thing is that there's some... like I mentioned, some pre-buying, if you want to call it that, from the funds and speculative community just wanting to get long corn and beans just in case there's a weather problem. So if there isn't, and that's a big if at this point, it may be a couple months before we know that. If there isn't a weather problem, this thing could have a long tail with normal crop size as the funds pull their money back out of the market. So, what I'm saying is I think producers have to be have a plan in mind. If we get back up to or above $4 cash corn, be ready to start making some incremental sales and add some put coverage in addition to that to protect the downside in case there's a big crop. And yet, at this point, you have to assume normal yields. There's nothing to tell us that we're going to be anything but normal right now.
Yeah, so let me ask you one other question, because the crude oil market, when it was at such very low prices, certainly depressed the rest of the commodity markets. We're now in the $50 range for crude oil, $49.66 at this point, $50 in the August contract. Is what we're seeing, how much of what we're seeing in price tag for commodities like corn and soybeans is just relief from not so much pressure from crude oil, and how much of it is coming from lack of supply out of South America?
I think a combination of both. So in addition to the mentality of the funds for the last couple months to just want to own commodities, and not just the grain markets, it's kind of a basket, the CRB index and some different commodity index type markets have had a nice bounce off the lows, some of that led by crude oil. So there was that mentality to begin with, and that probably has more to do with currency issues and stock market earnings assumptions going forward. And then, so that started first, and then you kind of added to it some issues popping up with maybe the Brazilian crop not being quite as big on the bean side as expected, some problems with their second crop corn being hot and dry during pollination, wet weather with...
Oops, we seem to have lost Chip for just a moment. Hang on, Chip, I got to bring you back. I think I know how to do that. How about that? I'm sorry about that, Chip. I lost you on air for a moment. I was... experiment.
No problem.
Okay, so we got to that point. Any final word from you for the producers today?
Well, just have a plan. Know what your costs are. Get some price levels in mind. Put offers in. I think we're in for a real bumpy ride. So, it's easy to get kind of bowled up that we've had a nice rally in beans and starting into what's been our best rally for several months in corn. But it all boils down to crop size. If we're raising normal crops, there's plenty of downside risk. So, have a plan. Don't get handcuffed or emotional about the volatility. Execute the plan and, stay defensive, live to fight another day.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
All right. Thanks for having me, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Chip Dellinger. He's with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, Bayer's proposed takeover of Monsanto has been sidelined or at least slowed for a bit, and that's okay with Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley. In fact, he suggests the last thing agriculture needs is more supplier concentration. Bayer officials claim Monsanto would be a good fit for Bayer's own seed and chemical business. Monsanto also sees the logic in combining with Bayer. Grassley warns, though, such deals with potentially big impacts on agriculture or other industries could bring added scrutiny from him and his committee.
So I do this frequently on antitrust issues, write a letter to the Justice Department letting them know that I'm going to be riding herd to make sure that the antitrust laws are enforced. Beyond that, there's always a possibility of hearings before the Judiciary Committee if we feel that there's grassroots interest in that, number one, or if within the Congress as a whole we feel that maybe justice is not looking thoroughly enough at the proposition.
The American Farm Bureau Federation, other ag groups too, are keeping a close eye on Bayer Monsanto developments, but acknowledge agribusiness continues to consolidate. Companies are seeking greater efficiencies and cost savings with the moves. Let's check in now on Washington, D.C., where on Monday the White House threatened to veto the House's energy and water spending bill, which will hit the House floor this week. The House will consider the $37.4 billion spending bill, which is slightly larger than the Senate passed. The Hill reports the bill contains a host of environmental riders likely to turn off Democrats. In a statement issued through the Office of Management and Budget, that's the OMB, the administration rejected what it called highly problematic ideological provisions. In particular, the administration wants more funding for the Advanced Research Projects Agency Energy, as well as energy efficiency and renewable energy programs. Elsewhere, the U.S. is not the only country where momentum for getting the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement passed has been slowed by politics. The Japanese government has also slowed its process to approve the deal, despite formal debate being started in the legislature. The current session ends on June the 1st, and sources say lawmakers there are unlikely to vote on TPP for a number of reasons. April's earthquake in the country has diverted legislative efforts to recovery, taking attention off of TPP. Election politics are also in play, as an election is set for July in the upper house of Japan's bicameral legislature. Some lawmakers there suggest the prime minister may want to see parallel movement on TPP in the U.S., and hopes ratification will take place in a similar time frame to the United States. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, are you ready? It's Memorial Day weekend, and that means the Indianapolis 500 and milk. More next. Our thanks to National Association of Farm Broadcasting member Andy Eubank of Hoosier Ag today for this story. 100 races at a racetrack steeped in tradition. The Yard of Bricks, Foyt, Unser, Rutherford, Mears, Penske, the 2.5-mile oval, and the winner's bottle of milk are among the history makers and fabric of the Indianapolis 500. Sunday, May the 29th, that's this Sunday, will be the 100th race, and Indiana dairy farmers Janet Dagg and Joe Kelsey are prepared to deliver the sporting world's coolest prize after keeping it cold and secure all race long.
It isn't a cooler, kept nice ice cold, but it has its own security in the suites.
Janet Dagg is the head milk person this year after handing bottles of milk to the winner's car owner and chief mechanic as a rookie last year. Kelsey is the rookie this year.
And this being the 100th running, what a special event, an iconic race, an iconic event, where now we're a special part of it. So it'll be much different, certainly part of the bucket list. But what's really cool is that as dairy farmers, we get to represent the hard work that happens every day to make nature's most perfect food, that milk that we get every day from the hardworking dairy farmers out there.
Dagg, a race fan and third-generation dairy farmer, is proud of Dairy Farmers' platform at the 500.
We are so very proud that the greatest spectacle in racing has taken the tradition of the drink of milk as seriously as they do. And as an Indiana dairy farmer, it makes us very proud that all of our hard work goes into making that milk, and the tradition and pageantry that goes into that bottle of milk and how it is celebrated at the Indianapolis 500.
The legendary Louis Meyer, Indy's first three-time winner, is acknowledged as the driver who launched the bottle of milk tradition when he asked for a glass of his favorite beverage, buttermilk, after winning back in 1933. 3 years later, Meyer was photographed in Victory Lane drinking milk. Milk was presented off and on during the next several years until 1956, when the bottle of milk was made a permanent part of the post-race celebration by Indianapolis Motor Speedway owner Tony Holman. American Dairy Association Indiana honored the Indiana 500 rookies at their annual luncheon at Indianapolis Motor Speedway this week. For the historic 100th running this Sunday, Hoosier Dairy Farmers and the Speedway have a plan for race fans to be part of the milk presentation to the winner, according to ADA Indiana General Manager Deb Oza.
Lauren George, one of the Holman George family members, had an idea of let's do something huge and let's make a giant toast, a world's record toast. And she thought 100,000 milks for the 100th running. And we said, yes, let's do that. That sounds like a wonderful idea. So the Motor Speedway partnered with Prairie Farms Dairy, and we will be making that happen on race day. We'll have 100,000 pints of ice cold 2% milk. And we'll be distributing that to race fans as they come in and throughout the day.
Fans should look for the distribution points as they arrive at the track, grab the free milk, and stick it in the cooler for toasting the winner from the stands at the end of the race. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Pete Meter Peterson now joins us from the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's the ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana. Hi, Pete. Thanks for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about how far along planting season is in your area?
I would say in general, here at the Climbers facility, right along the river, and it kind of separates the two different areas. Kind of south of the river here at Logansport, I would say all but done. Maybe a few pockets is not done, and anything to the north of us, I would say corn is probably 85% to 90% done. Beans, there's probably about 25% yet to go.
And what did basis do today for both corn and soybeans?
Basis today, we stayed unchanged. Nearby here at Climbers, we're at 8 over the July. Delphi, we're at 1 under the July, separation between the ethanol and the rail markets there. And on soybeans, we're at 21 under.
So you've got a tight basis all around. Of course, you were short of crop last year, and I would think you're thinking about that again this year already at this point.
Yeah, it's a little bit concerning, you know, the summer months, how much corn still left out there, and there may be a situation where corn may have to work its way a little bit from the east, or from the west, I should say, headed east. But right now we're kind of holding the line at traditional values, maybe a little better than that, and corn is still moving.
And do you know when you call the Delphi facility, a farmer's been making new crop soybean sales?
There's some done. I don't think not enough at this point in time. And yeah, with a big run like this, everybody just, I guess, a little bit apprehensive to jump out too soon. It seems like every day we're trying to put more money in this thing. But we're stressing heavily to guys get more on the books.
Thanks so much, Pete.
Okay, thank you.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Wine Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Anders Dahl died. A renowned Swedish botanist, the dahlia flower was named for him. The bushy perennial plant is native to Mexico, Central America, and Colombia. The Aztecs gathered and cultivated the plant for food, ceremony, as well as decorative purposes. In 1882, the first frozen mutton from New Zealand arrived in Britain. In 1986, about 7 million Americans participated in Hands Across America by holding hands and singing across 4,150 miles of road in support of the hungry and homeless. Participants paid $10 to reserve their place in line. The proceeds were donated to local charities. The longest unbroken part of the chain was allegedly in Illinois. And in 2007, Coca-Cola created a 3,000-gallon, 15-foot-high ice cream float with vanilla Coke and ice cream and set a new world record for the largest ice cream float in history. The float weighed in at 10 tons. A tanker from the Atlanta-based company's syrup plant pumped a non-carbonated mixture into a specially made 15-foot-high glass containing a device that carbonated the beverage. Workers dropped buckets full of ice cream into the top of the glass by hand. By the way, the float was certified as drinkable by health inspectors. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, for 100 years offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. It was sunshiny this morning, Drew, but I think it's going to get soggy. Let's start out west, where I think rainfall has already come for the hard red winter wheat. Tell me about that.
Yeah, almost every day now there's rain occurring in parts of the central and southern plains, and that is going to be an ongoing situation, taking us all the way through the weekend and probably through at least the first half of next week. The rain doesn't happen in every area every day, but there is rain in a part of the region. It does look like it's going to favor the heart of Kansas as well as some areas in Nebraska and central Oklahoma. And that's some pretty important real estate there for wheat production. And my guess is that we're going to hear more and more about the potential for some quality declines across that region. And there's already, of course, a little bit of rust and scab issues going on in some of the central plains, and that's going to be ongoing. But the crop looks great, and the yields are high. So if we can just keep the rain from becoming excessive, we'll have a tremendous crop. But I am a little concerned about this quality issue.
Will that rainfall make its way into the Midwest? It looks like it's going to slow down the end of the growing planting season, that is.
That's right. The precipitation is all occurring in a southwest to northeast flow pattern, which, if you go back in history, they've always created too much moisture for a big part of the plains and Midwest when we get into the southwest flow. The only thing that's different about this pattern right now is it's a weak one, and that's not helping us any because the systems are just drifting through the area from southwest to northeast. Plenty of Gulf of Mexico moisture being pulled northward, and the showers are not moving fast enough, so we're going to see some heavy amounts of rain in the western Corn Belt over this next 5 to 7 days. Eastern Midwest will probably see some lighter amounts of rain, but it's still going to rain often enough to limit some of the field progress. So we'll have to watch closely for some potential for flooding, perhaps in places like Iowa, eastern Nebraska, and maybe northern Missouri.
It's gotten much warmer. Any worry that the temperatures will get hot later in the summer?
Well, I certainly think that we're going to get that way eventually. It's not quite ready to do it. I think we'll see a couple of rounds of warmer weather in June, but it'll be separated by some more of this rainfall and somewhat milder conditions. But certainly when we get into July, late July in particular, and into August, yeah, there'll be quite a bit of warmth around, and we'll see some accelerated drying across the region, an increase in crop stress. So it's going to be a summer we're going to need to keep our eye on everything. Certainly these crops that are going to be planted late are going to be vulnerable to the greatest yield potential losses, perhaps.
Is there any place in North America that is too dry?
One is in the lower parts of the Mississippi Delta area, and from there into western Georgia and northwestern Florida. That area has been pretty dry here recently. It is going to get some rain, though, in about a week to 10 days from now. Some showers will occur. That area is probably still going to keep a bias towards dryness, and it'll be the seedling of our summer dryness that's likely to expand up into the plains and southwestern Corn Belt, so we'll keep an eye on that.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Yovai Extension's Todd Gleason.